What's up, people? Welcome back to Garage Media Junkies, episode number 55. I know. So, Hugo and I are back without Sydney this time. She had some stuff to do, but we really do enjoy that you have joined us again.
Right.
So, we're going to just jump right in. Our topic this week.
War.
Yeah.
So, we went... You went to premiere.
I went Thursday night to Infinity War.
I went, I think it was Sunday.
So you went a few days later.
Funny thing was because Nicole went, my wife wanted to watch it, which I was like, what? You know?
Well, that at least tells you just the amount of hype behind this, that casual moviegoers are like, hey, this might be something that I would like to go to, even though I have zero base knowledge of it.
Which is like probably like the biggest percentage, because really, like they say, it's for fans, but I mean that fan population is minimum, I think.
Well, the diehard fan population, and then you have your casual fan population, and then you just have a casual moviegoer. I'd put Nicole in the latter, where she's a casual moviegoer.
Which sadly, those movies are like, that's the public those movies are made up for.
Yeah, not the casual.
But anyways, it's been a hit. Whatever way you want to see it. I think it's already like got around the mark of $1 billion or something.
$1 billion at this point.
Just 1 week. Like, even if you're a bastard like me, they kind of sort of... It's not like I hate them, but I'm tired of them. Like, still need to step back and like, all right. You know,
credit where credit's due. We haven't even opened in China yet, have we?
Right. But I hear the China. Oh, no, wait a minute. Those are the Star Wars. Yeah, I'm getting confused.
China eats up Marvel films, so they're gonna come out to droves. And if they treat this like they treated Warcraft,
this easily is gonna be the biggest movie ever. Like, on financial matters.
I think I heard somewhere that Disney now owns 8 out of the 10 movies in the top 10 grossing movies of all time.
And if that doesn't tell you that Disney's evil, like, I don't know what else.
Yeah, I don't know what's evil. And you know the devil owns this because we all like it.
Right. It's like fast food and shit like that. Sorry. If you're a fan of, like, these movies, probably you're right now, like, putting, like, a 0 star in the review. But
screw these guys.
It's not much I can say.
So while we break this down, I'm happy to have Hugo here because Hugo... does have a more critical eye towards it. I mean, it's not that he doesn't like these movies. He's seen a few of them.
Right, right.
You've enjoyed them, but now you're ready for something new or something fresh. And these movies, and I agree, don't quite deliver that.
Yeah.
When you strip it down to its bare bones, it's the same type of movie over and over again. So I can see where you and somebody like Sydney would just not always just enjoy the consumption.
Lose the interest, obviously. Especially, I mean, Sydney... taste like the grease strangler, like that's tell you everything.
Sydney is a very target market.
I still like want to watch that, like I started watching it, but then I think I fell asleep, so I didn't finish.
Oh my god.
But I mean, with that name, you can imagine like, type of movie it is.
What's gonna happen in there?
I will tell you a little bit in a future podcast when I finish the movie. Maybe I can talking with Sydney, and you can be like the guy that never sees that and make all the questions you can make.
Yeah, maybe we should make it like a movie, like a science movie theater 3000 where we watch it and then podcast over it.
Maybe. Or maybe we can do a react video.
Exactly.
Something like that.
That would be good.
Anyways.
So back to Infinity War.
Yeah.
So this is a big one. I saw it, like I said, opening night. I remember I texted Hugo.
It was packed, I imagine.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to ask you. Was yours packed?
I mean, the thing is I choose a smaller,
a theater.
What's called, like, the room.
Yeah.
It has less seats. So it was full, but still, it was like, I think at 3 Sundays, so it's not like peak hours.
Okay, so you went to like a
matinee. Kind of okay.
There was not an open seat. In ours. I mean, my buddy bought ours like day one. They were on sale when that trailer hit. But I have to remember everything that we were saying. This is a spoiler cast. So please, if you haven't listened, if you haven't watched the movie, please go out and watch it. Come back to our podcast when you're ready. And if you have seen it, then, enjoy the ride here. Because when Hugo texts me that opening night, and right, I sat there looking at sex. He gave me his
like, this fucker, how I'm gonna put this for him.
Right, yeah, because he texted me, he's like, is it worth the hype, or does it defy expectations? And I really struggled putting it into words. Like, I wrote like 1,000 different things, but I was like, I don't know what to tell him without spoiling it or giving away the emotion.
It's not one of those movies that you can easily explain or like without giving away them. It just feels like, doesn't matter what you say, you may spoil the movie.
So basically what I told him were 3 lines, which was, it is light on story, it is heavy on action, and then high on stakes. Obviously high on stakes because people do die. Right. It was heavy on action because this was just one set piece after another, but it was so light in its story. Like, there's not a lot there. It's hard for me to even break this down into act 1, act 2, act 3. I know I can, but it's not there. There really isn't.
They jump a lot on different.
It kind of felt like a comic book, like where you just kind of flip and flip and flip and flip, and you're just jumping from scene to scene. But so, you know, you come to the gripes of the movie, of it not having enough story. But if you look at it through the lens of the bad guy, this movie totally could have been called the Thanos the movie, is what we said.
Which we agree that Josh Brolin did a great job. Yeah. And it didn't surprise me when they cast him. I mean, he's one of those guys that, even though he's not like, oh my gosh, like this guy is like exquisite in his skills for acting, he's really consistent when he in his roles. Like, it seems like he's going to do another great job with Cable and Deadpool.
I'm interested to see what he does with Cable and if it can be different, or if I'm going to watch like a live action Thanos if he delivers lines in a certain way. But I do agree with you. His candor, his delivery.
Like, every line that he spit on that movie, like, it feels like has some like conviction of, like, you know?
Right. And it's, this is the first Marvel villain where I feel like we can relate to the villain in a certain way. Because when Thanos
he's a freaking psycho, but still.
There's a reason he's called the Mad Titan. But I mean, when he talked about his plan of ending half the universe, half your population, he's not wrong to a certain degree. When you look at just from a math standpoint, you know, we all could use a cutback. And I read an article where somebody says that his reasoning was flawed because, you know, the Earth's population like quadrupled in just a matter of 100 years. Well, I would assume that if one day half the population just disappeared out of nowhere, we'd be all a little bit wiser of being like, you know what? The Earth is running way better. We are no longer having these problems. Maybe we should run population control.
I don't know. If my kid disappeared, like, from out of nowhere, I think I will lose my mind. I don't think, you know.
But think about it. You're not exactly reproducing again. And then we're always... There's a show on HBO called The Leftovers. I don't know if you've ever saw
it. I hear about it, but...
It's the exact same thing where half... Like, it was like a certain percent, 1.2% of the population disappeared. But everybody just loses it.
Yeah.
And the world really isn't the same. It's kind of the same concept that I would kind of like to see in this movie, but we don't get there.
Right.
But you understand Thanos' perspective of, if half the population is gone, then everybody else can live in peace.
Yeah.
And he wants to do it as humanely as possible. He's not, and that's what you were saying before.
Right.
He's not an evil, evil person.
Yeah, it's like, I don't think they feel anything.
Yeah, he wanted to do it in the most humane way of just like snapping his fingers and you're gone, painless.
Yeah.
So to me, I was saying this before we did a dry run of this whole talk.
It was a little technical issue.
I was saying before, halfway through the movie, my wife leaned over to me and she goes, "Is it just me or is Thanos my father?" And I really had a good laugh because the way Thanos thinks and he speaks and he's so sure that he's right. Is my father-in-law. Like, my father-in-law is literally Thanos. Like, everything about him. And so it was super funny to me. When I told my father-in-law what Thanos' plan was, he goes, "So what's the problem?" And I was like, there you go.
You know what? It's so funny. Now you mentioned this because I thought about Kratos. Then you got a war.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, boy. Boy. So everything was boy like these. I just want to put more context. Now, it's not like we're going to talk about God of War today. But I saw the whole gameplay story because I text you. Like,
yeah,
I'm fucking jealous of the PS4 owners. Like, that's true. I mean, I'm not going to lie about it. It's not like I'm going to go out and buy a PS4. But it was like, oh, damn, Xbox. And yeah, it's so funny the interaction that he has with the kid and like the new face on his life. You know, he's trying to be a father. Like, you can see he's struggling, but he's like, no, I'm like a manly man. Yeah. So I thought about that. It's like, yeah, poor Gamora. She had it tough.
She really did have it tough. Yeah. Gamora is another one that I didn't think would have a big of a role. Like, I knew she was going to have a role because it's obviously
Thanos. Yeah, the father.
But I didn't know it was going to be like how it was. Again, guys, spoilers. You shouldn't be here if you haven't seen it. When did you know that she was going to die?
Around when they happened, the whole thing with Nebula.
Mm.
I was like, one of these two need to die. I didn't know it specifically would be Gamora. But I knew, like, yeah, like, in my hopes.
It was Nebula?
No. In my hopes of these guys are, like, can create a good drama. You know, when you create a, especially a family drama, because that's how it feels some part of the movie. It's like, you know, you're not going to create all these, like, sister problem and then reunite them. And then if the father is going to show up, which is the keystone of their problems, and this guy is one of the most powerful being in the universe, it just led to chaos. So in my head, it's like, one of these two needs to die. Because they've been creating this relationship towards several movies. So you need to have a relief in the form of chaos or like something dramatic to happen to that like triangle to work. You know, for me, story-wise. So, yeah, I knew it. And as soon as they went, like, as soon as I think she said, I know something the Thanos don't know, like, oh, that's...
Yeah, when she definitely said that, because to me, that came kind of out of left field because, you know, we've been with her all these times in the Guardians and we've never had it mentioned. Not that they're looking for it.
Right.
But you think that that would have been an inkling she had when they found the Power Stone. Either way... when she did say that, she's like, I know something that he doesn't. Like, and then she kept talking to Peter, you know, like, kill me if
kill
he does
me,
get.
Exactly.
You're like, that doesn't bode well. The part for me where I was just like, she's not making it out of this is when, after she tells him where the stone is, and then they both go to that planet.
I'm by like, itself, so, you know, like, I was alone.
Like, I'm like, no, why would you bring her? Like, when you really think about it, that's a flaw in the story. It's a storytelling device that he would have just... by chance brought her. There's no reason he should have brought her.
Right, because even if they, like, which, you know, there's another, no problem, but, like, they pull it out of their asses, like, oh, Red Skull, now it's, like, the guardian of this shit.
Oh, my God, yeah.
But, you know,
it's
like,
not
whatever.
Even Hugo Weaving.
Yeah. I was like, ah, whatever, you know.
Yeah, they're just trying to tie up
loose ends. At this point, like nobody remembered the fucking...
You know what, though? But the diehards, dude, that's like, it was like one of the biggest questions everybody was like, we need answers for.
Yeah.
And so when he showed up,
even just to finish my idea on that, he didn't even know they needed Gamora.
Exactly.
Until,
him. It's a plot device that he would have even just casually brought her. But the second they just teleported that planet, I was like, fuck, she's going to die.
Or and something, you know, is going
to
happen.
I noticed, like, it really kind of got to me when... like Red Skull showed up at first, but he pulled up in his like robes and he's all flowy. But if you notice, Thanos steps in front of Gamora to block her.
Yeah,
he has such an instinctual like protective drive of her. So it made it all the more hard as I was like, dang it.
It reminds me of one time one of my neighbors has this big ass dog just running outside the yard. And you know, my house is on the side. Came out, my son started running, and freaking dog is just like instantly, he was ready to jump in, and I just like move, like I don't even thought about it. It was instinct. So it's something like that. Like at least on there are certain beats and parts of the develop of the character of Thanos that kind of worked, even though at that point it was like, these guys, motherfuckers, they just pull it out of their asses. They're gonna tie it up, you know. At that point, you like you say, you know, maybe he's not gonna die, but something's gonna happen.
Yeah.
But, you know, those little details sort of blur that thought of your head. Like, all right, these guys kind of human.
Yeah. Like
or, like, have some feelings, you know?
You can see, and that's what I mean by, like, you can recognize some of yourself in Thanos. We've all been to that moment where we protected somebody that we love instinctually when the unknown pops up. Only for it to happen where he's just like, you have to kill something you love. It was hard for me to see Gamora be like, yeah, in your face.
Yeah, it's like, sucker.
And then have Thanos just be like a single tear falling and then have it hit her. Because the whole audience already knows. We're like, you idiot, run.
Yeah.
And then he just tosses her off, you know.
Even Rez Kula, you're doomed.
Like, it was... You would think for somebody like Gamora, who's as smart as she is, kind of would have pieced that one together a little bit quicker.
Well, because I think it's not like I'm defending the character, but on her hopes of, haha, checkmate at the end, I have the bigger laugh, but not true.
Yeah.
It's like, I think at that point, even Gamora got surprised that Thanos had that feelings for her.
Yeah.
Again, we come back to this more elaborate villain where, I mean, yeah, bottom line, if we peel all the layers, he's a evil person because her desires are bigger than, you know, the commonwealth of the universe.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was, even though with the flaws, probably was the biggest dramatic scene on the Marvel universe.
It was the biggest traumatic scene that I didn't feel was cheap.
Right, so exactly.
Because when you talk about, like, the biggest dramatic scene that's causing everybody to panic, it's the disintegration scene of everybody. But that one, to me, feels like the biggest middle finger. I mean, I know what happens. I know in the comics what happens. I know a lot of this will get reversed, but, like, you're like...
Just the way it's made.
And how many characters go, and which ones go, and which ones didn't. I'm like, this is some bullshit.
Yeah, like... It almost feels like, all right, we're running out of time to make it 2 hours something.
Yeah.
Let's just make it this beer. Even the one with Spider-Man, like, they took a little bit more time and, like, because the context of Tony Stark and his struggle. Yeah. Like, all right, that kind of works. Yeah.
You know what? I hated the way that Bucky went first and then, like, him and Cap never got any real interaction. They just kind of looked at each other and, like, Bucky went. And you're like, that's it? Yeah. That's the you would expect something like the Spider-Man, Iron Man kind of like interaction between them when he went to make it a little bit harder. Black Panther goes next.
I don't know.
And you're just like, what? My brain at that point was like, okay, the second Black Panther went, I was like, none of this is staying. You just had the biggest opening of your entire career in a brand new franchise, and he's gone.
Yeah, and especially as being one of the most successful characters of the last Marvel movies, you will expect, like, you know, some developing in there or something when he died.
Had Okoye died instead of him, I would have been a little bit more concerned for everybody going. Same thing with Spider-Man, though. Second Spider-Man went, I was like, okay, that's not true. They're making more Spider-Man films. Yeah. So to me, like, it took me out of it when certain heroes disintegrated. I hated, like, all the Guardians are now gone except for Rocket. My buddy made a really offhand joke. He's like, wow, well, can't wait to go see Guardian 3.
Guardian
Rocket's
3,
Boogaloo. Like, because that's he's literally all
that's
left.
Yeah, the only one.
I hated that Peter left, or he disintegrated when...
Right.
When everything happened, I was like, well, this... In my brain, I was thinking, this is great. Peter will still try to get revenge. This is going to be the end of his arc to go and fight Thanos in the next one, and he's going to... Oh,
and it may happen. It may happen, though, but...
I mean... We'll get to predictions, but... I mean,
everything will be fine until, like, if they... Somehow Gamora comes to life, like, that shit. She died before all the stones were in the gauntlet.
I'm not entirely sure of that. I think Gamora's in the Soul Stone. Her soul was traded for the Soul Stone.
Yeah.
So I think if they revert the Soul Stone, you get Gamora back. I think people like Loki...
Yeah.
Loki died before that happened. So I think Loki's permanently kind of axed.
Gone.
And then I think Vision might be axed.
Well, I'm pretty sure that they save all his dad or brain or whatever.
You could be right. Yeah. You could be right. And then there's like he went kind of colorless there, and that's his West Coast Avengers look, right, of just being like a colorless Vision, emotional, more robotic. So I can see that happening, but I do think that Loki is like permanently gone, along with most of the Asgardians.
Yeah, poor guys. They destroy their world and then fuck it.
I was really pissed too, because I didn't even get to see what happened to like Valkyrie or Korg, but I think the Russo brothers did say that they're alive somewhere. Well,
I mean, I can see a schedule problem or like too much people cramming this.
Well, you saw it. I mean, I'll give the Russo brothers this. While I didn't feel like everybody got their adequate screen time, the film worked. The boat could float with 60 plus characters there. The boat was floating. Like, I couldn't say the same thing for Ultron. Ultron was this big, bloated mess of a film that I felt was just slowly sinking as we went along.
Yeah.
This at least floated.
Even Civil War flowed better than Ultron.
Oh, and you know what? I'll get into it now. my problem with just the Avengers films is the stakes have to be high enough, and then there has to be a reason to bring all of these characters together. I almost would rather they didn't do Ultron and they just would have made Civil War the event, like the next Avengers movie, because we were already teased Thanos at the end of the first one. So everybody's ready for Thanos, and then Avengers 2 is Ultron. Like, what?
Yeah, but in a sense, it's not a great movie, but it gives the link towards Civil War, because if it didn't happen Ultron, then the whole plot of Civil War will come out of nowhere.
You could have made that like Tony, like Iron Man 3, was that he made Ultron to some degree. True. And you could have led up to it. I would have much rather had this divide happen in the second, like kind of like The Empire Strikes Back, where you have that ending of the movie where everybody's split. And now you have phase 3 happening after that, where everybody's trying to figure their stuff out and have gone their separate ways, only to come back for Infinity War to where we lose round 1. And then we come back for round 2. But to me, I mean, that's a small gripe. I think this was, I don't know. People ask, I've been asked a lot, like, how would I rank this one? I'm not sure yet.
Right.
I need to see the other half.
Or watch it again, probably.
Watch it. I mean, if you put a gun to my head and make me do it, I'm going to rank it in my top 5. I think it's around 4 or 5 for me.
The thing is, the movie is kind of like what happened with those Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings. Well, no, the other, you know, movies where, you left with the sense like this is not the whole movie. And it's, you know, that was planned.
It's not even the meat of the story. To me, this is like when you read like the inside cover of a book, or you read like the prelude for a play. This is setting the stage. Imagine that this was just a 1-page introduction of Avengers are on Earth and Thanos has come. He's collected the 6 stones and effectively half of humanity is gone, and with it half the Avengers. What will they do? That's 3 hours of Infinity War, by the way. That's it. That's why I said it was light on story.
Yeah.
That's it. And now what do you do? I think the next movie is going to deliver that meat and potatoes of this story of how the Avengers react, how they are Avengers.
Right.
And then, so to me, this was a great introduction.
Yeah, and for me, the other issue that I... Well, not issue, but it's like the layout for the future of this franchise. The reality is the Avengers on some of the comics, once the story start going to these powerful beings, they're nothing, really, you know?
You know,
once you start digging like the like more powerful beings on the Marvel universe, the Avengers really, they don't play a big role. They're there for the folklore and they show up, but like they really don't participate in a lot of the next, I mean, if that's the line they're going forward, you know.
Yeah, the likes of how Captain America can even hold his own against somebody like a Thanos is unrealistic at best.
Yeah.
I think the whole point of Captain America even being against Thanos is being like, yeah, I'm the one man that'll stand against you, even when I just watched you kill everybody stronger than me. That's the point Captain America makes. But really, what is he going to do when Colossus comes, or when anybody else comes that is way bigger than him?
The Celestials and all that stuff.
Well, you can't do anything. So to me, so
they need to play it really smart, because you don't want to. Because once people lose that, what it's called, the mystic of the Avengers, once people realize, like, well, you know, now you're putting these massive, powerful dudes, like what they have to do in this.
Think about it like this too. If Captain America ever ran into somebody from Doctor Strange's like opposing bench, yeah. Captain America loses.
Yeah.
If you ever get put in the glass dimension or, you know, the finger dimension, like right, Captain America loses. There's no way out of that.
Even Doctor Strange have a hard, tough time with that, you know,
right,
other guy.
Right. And so to me, you're right. So I think what they're going to do at the end of this phase is definitely phase out a lot of the heroes that we do know, or at least retire them so we're not seeing them. And then the next time we do see them is in the next Avengers movie, or they're going to just pass on at the end of this one. Caroline has a wonderful theory. Whenever she does here, I'll have her share it. But in the meantime, I need to ask you, like, what was the most powerful, at least for you, because this is big for you. Did you feel like there was a powerful scene in the movie that you were like, all right, I respect that?
The Gamora one, even though it has flaws, they round up Thanos' character, you know, whole plot and, like, meaning behind the character right there, you know. It's like the full circle right there, because he showed you all the layers of this guy. Yeah, in his own way, he loved Gamora so much, but at the same time, he's like this, like, tough guy that even with her daughter, it's like, doesn't matter, you know. It's like the medium to get to my goal, like, nothing is on my way. But the fact that he cry and also feel it, it's just that. It's just like they rounded up the character at that moment to show all his, like, sides and make it a more complex character, which is something that I don't think I see in this universe or, like, this franchise.
And I think you don't see it because Marvel takes a pretty good heavy-handed standpoint to focus on its heroes, to develop its heroes, and therefore, just by that equation, that math equation of focus on heroes, action, comedy, you leave out. There's no way to fit in development of your villain.
Yeah, it's just all of them are being like Loki. I want to conquer New York, not even the world. But
and you said it before we were, you know, had technical difficulties. Right. Loki wasn't even a big threat in number one. It was more his army that was the threat.
And it was Thanos' army, not even his army.
Right, yeah, the weird black war beasts that he had, that was more of the threat. But, I mean, once Thanos got the stones, it was, you can't fight against that, clearly, even with an axe in your chest.
Well, yeah.
So, I think, for me, one of the most profound scenes, and I haven't talked to anybody else who even, not even, like, agreed, but even it was, like, on their radar. It was a scene where Thanos had already had the Reality Stone, and he was taking Gamora, and she was, like, pleading with, you know, Star-Lord, like, you promised.
All right.
The psychology behind that, you know, Peter already watched his mom die.
Right.
Peter has just come off a fresh adventure of, you know, listening to his dad killing his mother for his version of love.
Right.
Because he couldn't bear to go back to see her. The whole idea of killing what you love or running from it, like, Peter has abandonment issues as it is.
Yeah.
So to kill, like, to have that be asked of him, totally, for somebody like him, would send him into PTSD. But to be able to be strong enough to tell each other that they love each other,
right,
and then for Peter to pull that trigger to, in his mind, because everybody I've talked to go, but he didn't really kill her, though, it was the bubbles. I said, but in his mind, imagine the kind of courage you have,
right,
to pull that, like, look your lover in the eye, your person, and pull that
and
trigger.
Take that decision, just that by itself.
Because if you don't think that that's hard, imagine pulling a Band-Aid off of you and you're like, oh, I don't want to do, or jumping into a cold water.
Yeah.
Your body fights you on it. Your mind fights you on it. Like, so you can only imagine, like, the struggle Peter's going through, and then to actually do it. I think that's why he's actually earned Thanos' respect, where he's like, I like you, because he knows, like, that was hard and you did it, but you know, I still win. And then he disappeared. To me, that hit so hard, because then he was left by himself knowing that this abusive person has just taken her back. Like,
yeah.
That shattered me in the theater. I was like, damn.
I think the only reason it didn't work as powerful, I mean, I acknowledge that.
Yeah.
Probably, yeah, that was another one that was, you know, on a dramatic level, like, sort of well made. The only problem they have with that is this sort of, they made this weird thing where they mix it with comedy, which is, you know, it's a problem they have with the Marvel movies. It's like, if you're going to make a dramatic movie, let it be dramatic.
I think they're afraid to be dramatic because of what happened with the DCEU.
It's like, no, actually, it's going to enhance. Like, it's fine. You can have your comedy relief moments. We get it. But, you know, if you're going to, you already bothered to create, you
this
know, writing, yeah, to write that scene. And if, like, you want to run that up real well, just let it be what it is. It's a dramatic scene. Like, the way you describe it to me, like, oh, shit, like, actually,
yeah,
it add another layer to what was going on the screen.
But it's completely undermined. And I think this is the yeah, humor that you're talking about. It's completely yeah, undermined with the bubbles.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know, like, actually will be more impactful if Thanos already can, you know, control the space or what was the reality.
Yeah.
Actually make it happen. Gamora dies and then, oh, oops, it's not real. I just play with your mind.
Peter like sees her die in front of him.
You destroyed the poor guy right there because, you know, Peter is always sort of cocky and positive and, you know.
I think the only reason that they might, not the only reason, but if you do that, that's two gotchas of the same thing back to back, because Gamora literally does that to Thanos right before. I don't think she needed to.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it still proved a point that she cried over his like having to kill him. Yeah. And so you're weighted with two different things. You just did the same thing with Gamora there that you did, but you didn't want to do with Peter. But I agree that if he had really done that and then, you know, Thanos just kind of like, like waves his arm and she's like right back. Yeah. It didn't happen.
That would be like super effective.
Right.
Like it was like because, you know, at that point you're griping for Peter on that scene. Like you're sort of with him because on a psychological level, and you will probably agree, that situation is universal. Probably like everybody will feel that struggle. Just to imagine the person that you love, you have to take this decision.
Because
you're already invested in there.
Exactly. Because if you don't believe me, I mean, I knew people who just didn't care for Scarlet Witch or Vision, and that scene where Scarlet Witch has to kill Vision, and they let you linger in it. There's no comedy in that.
Right.
And they let you see her like blow him up. Like I almost gasped when like he just like flew into 1,000 pieces, because it was kind of graphic to just see Vision just explode like that. You should have let us have a moment with with a couple that really mattered, which was for me. I always rooted for Peter and Gamora just to be together. And,
right.
And so for you to take that away and undermine it, like I know a lot of people kind of rolled their eyes at that scene, and that really undercuts every piece of weight to that scene. Cause like you said, you glossed right over it. Cause you're like, oh, so stupid.
Yeah. It's like, come on guys. I mean, you can get it. Is the galaxy, the Guardians of the Galaxy. And so far those guys are being like the more funniest part of the whole movies. And also that, you know, right there, those are the, like, on the whole Marvel movies, those are the ones they always take more risk. So what better way to take a risk? To be the one that, like, to be a little bit more serious in that regard.
I think it's because if you take a risk with something like this, you risk, because look at the box office.
Like, yeah, I don't think it will hurt.
I think what they were afraid of is that it might hurt, like, repeat viewings.
No, I think I can see that they write it like that. It's possible that they write it that, like that. But it seems like the reasoning behind that, it's, you know, make it more family friendly.
Right, right. Because I was thinking, like, you know, if you take your kid to go see it.
Hello. Coming in.
You take your kid to go see it and you don't know that's happening. She's
coming to a right moment.
I know.
Where, you know, this is getting good.
So my wife's favorite character is Gamora. So right now we're talking about like the most impactful scene in the movie for you. And for me, it was the Peter Gamora scene where she's begging Peter to kill him.
Kill her.
Yeah, kill her. And he does. And the whole psychology behind it of, you know, he's already got abandonment issues and he decides to pull it. But Hugo made a point where he's like, I totally missed that because it was all undercut by the bubbles. And he goes, it was really funny. He goes, I don't like that Marvel kind of adds that humor when something should have been dramatic. Just be dramatic.
Yeah.
Live in that moment.
I shy away from that.
Right. And so that's what we were just kind of talking about. Why you think like they pulled that punch. And And I said it was more for like repeat viewings. Like parents bring their kids and they see, because he had a great change for the scene, which was let Peter kill her and then have Thanos kind of wave the stone like he did before. And after Peter's like grieving again for Gamora that he just killed, she's alive. They're just over to the right. Like,
but for Disney being in control of right. that, it's way too heavy.
Evil Disney.
There you go.
So I have a few questions, but I had I know you had a theory. I didn't want to take credit for it. Your theory of, because Hugo's saying like nothing really matters as far as like the deaths. We know these people are coming back, but you had a wonderful theory about the people who lived versus the people who died and what that means coming forward.
Oh, well, especially because, you made the observation that a lot of them were like the original, like the first people that came through in the Marvel universe. That's what you did, right? So I just thought, well, whoever did actually survive, at least in this first part, probably isn't going to carry on in the actual second part. Like, they really will be gone. So, like, Captain America or Iron Man, like, this may be their exit in one way or another, whether it is death or...
I don't know how to take that.
Because when you think about it and you look at all the characters that did live...
Yeah, like your favorites, like Black Panther and Peter.
Right, they all died. But what she's saying, too, is, like, I like that you added that other part, which was... Either you die or this is your exit.
Yeah.
Right. So Tony may die or Cap may die, but Tony may say like, I'm retiring. Yeah. I need to go back to Pepper.
Done.
And he's not having any more films. So a lot of these characters that are alive right now in this last little hurrah are this is their final movie.
Yeah.
It has sense because a lot of the actors, I mean, now that I watch Robert Downey Jr. is like, oh man, yeah, you're
over
getting old, you know, like. This one, like, age didn't grace him that much, you know. He has the charm, but...
Yeah.
But then, I don't know, I will feel weird because then I may get more angry about it. Because then I feel they didn't get rid of them in a proper way.
Right.
We talk about it, that, like, they didn't give him the time to, like, okay, this guy, or at least the heroes that has this legacy of movies already, and... Suddenly they just like, you know, disappear.
Yeah, I feel like that's how they're going to make way for whoever else they're going to bring into the fold or focus on. So we'll see.
Oh, man.
We will. So I do have to ask you, Caroline, which one of the deaths did you feel didn't get enough attention? There were a lot of deaths because we're talking the ones at the end. Gamora, as we all agree upon that, had an adequate like build up and it happened. It shocked us, but there was enough time for even the audience to grieve with it. But out of the final scenes of disintegration, which one do you feel was really cheap when it happened?
Well, overall, I felt that both Captain America and Bucky didn't get much screen time. And so Bucky was like, why is he just disintegrating? Wasn't he the first one?
He was.
So you were like, and then it's just over.
Like, just somebody passed far in the...
yeah, exactly. Like, you're passing, not dude, sure if it was there, but it kind of happened.
Like, dude.
I, you and I had the same one where it was just like, it was Bucky. Like, if Bucky's this Winter Soldier and, like, Cap for the last
three
movies has tried to defend this person in all of his movies, Bucky kind of looks at him. He's like, we did good. And then just he's
evaporate.
Gone.
I get my arm back. Oh.
Yeah, exactly. It means nothing.
Worried, speaking of humor, I was worried that his arm would fall because it didn't disintegrate because it's not part of him. And like Rocket would run up and grab it. And I didn't want that to happen.
That will be so bad taste. Right then, yeah.
Poor taste.
That was one of the
taste.
Funniest jokes in the movie.
Well, yeah.
I'll get that arm.
Yeah. Get that arm. So, I love Rocket so much.
So I'm glad that you agree with that. And I think Hugo said there was a few other ones. But he said like somebody like Spider-Man got enough of that moment.
Oh, he pulled a punch in terms of pulling your heartstrings. Just like holding on to Tony and he's just a kid. It's messed
for a second,
up.
I thought Tony will be like, oh, please, Kate, don't go.
Right. But it was.
I really do think Tony felt so responsible for him. Like, a kid. And he was just like, I can't. Like, it's literally that situation where no matter what suit I put you in right now or what I can give you, I can't save you.
Told Marissa Tomei and you take care of her.
His character was surprisingly kind of like, I like the tone that they put on the character because really literally he's been working his ass off a couple of movies ago to prevent these to happen, and then it's kind of like with Batman when they have these rules even though they're like they go into separate lines in life, but they have their core
The code, yeah.
You know, even when Iron Man is like all flashy, like whatever, he has a line to follow.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like finally, like, yeah, I don't have control of this. Like, it's just already past me. Even though I have the armor, I have the money, I'm the charm guy, I'm super smart. You know,
and I'm glad you brought up Batman, because Batman went through something similar with Jason Todd. I played Arkham Asylum, and you're like, what's happening? Yeah. When he lost his Robin, and the Joker ended up like killing him and then turning him, but like Batman grieved for a really long time, because it was one of those situations where he's like, "This is why I don't have partners."
Partners, yeah.
I had like that emotional toll, and I think that that was really good to put Tony through,
even though he's not as
his
strong
sidekick,
as Batman or Dark. Still, it works on the movie, because for a long time Iron Man, it's also kind of like that. It's invincible. It's the guy with charms, with the luck. Nobody happened. And then suddenly, the thing that he's been trying to protect is like, no, it's like F you and your face.
Yeah, you can't do anything.
Like, Thanos, I've been here for you for a long time.
He's crazy.
I told them the how you leaned over to me in the middle of the movie and was like, Thanos is your father. I apologize to Dave.
Just, it's too real.
Now, I know my wife doesn't read the comics and she casually follows, so she's in that middle ground. Like, what did you think of this personification of Thanos?
It's kind of hard to put into words, but I didn't like him per se, because he's messed up and he's dark and he's got a skewed, but I believed in where he was coming from, or at least wasn't just what's his face from the first Guardians. It wasn't a
Ronan the Accuser.
A Ronan the Accuser. Oh. Like, I don't believe in what you're preaching. You have no background. Like, I don't take you seriously. Okay, go away now.
Like the typical, I'm evil because
I feared Thanos. He was, but he also had a calm. It wasn't just like a rage or some weird, like, I just have this block on my shoulder. He had solid foundation as to what brought him to this point and why he was executing his plan and his master vision. But he was scary, believable, grounded, and
and even to a certain point, even sort of kind. Because he asked for the stones in first place.
Yeah, you don't hear that from any bad guys.
Give me the stones. You know, I still am going to get rid of half the population, but you don't need to sweat for, you know.
I had this panicked moment, too, when he had stabbed Tony. And then Strange said, like, I will give you the time stone if you spare his life. When you think of all the other bad guys, they immediately would have taken the time stone and then killed both of them right there. Kill shots, both of them, like, bang, bang, dead.
Yeah, it's like
he's a reasonable guy. He's like, no tricks. And then Strange is like, no tricks, man. Like, here you go. He let Tony live. Like, I was dumbfounded. I'm like, holy crap, he kept his word.
It's like they tell you, like, finally they give us a villain that has more layers and there's more
layers. That's
complex, you know, for Marvel standards, of course, but it's, you know, welcoming that part for sure.
Yeah.
It's also, I felt like, a more old school approach in terms of a villain. There's a controlled chaos to him. He's not just like, he's not a crazy Joker out of control, or you have no idea what their background is. Like, they're a wild rabid dog. He's intimidating in his own right. He's controlled, but he's got the power, and you feel that.
And when he needs to be savage, he's savage.
Yeah, he goes for it.
Poor Hulk, obviously. Like, no, I'm not. I don't want to. Yeah, you're by yourself, Ruffalo.
If that didn't set the bar, because again, it brings me to the point of, like, the false advertisement that the movie made with having Hulk in the movie after that. Because I was kind of expecting it. I'm like, why isn't he just Hulking out already? But it made quite a statement for Hulk to just say, no.
See ya, guys.
No. Not playing that game.
Yeah.
Peace out.
When you think of Hulk, you think of, like, oh, when shit went down. Like, you remember the first Avengers when that big worm thing was flying through, and you're like, how are they going to stop that? And then Hulk just one punches it.
We have a Hulk.
Yeah. And then to have Hulk be like, I'm out. Can't do this.
Yeah. That was what I matched.
Yeah.
I went up against a wolf.
Right.
And some other thing.
I could beat a wolf. I could beat a god of thunder. I cannot beat a purple ball sack.
What you guys thought about, like, the action scenes? What's something that bothers me a lot during the movie?
I know cuts bother you a lot, like when they're like one after another after another after another.
Mm-hmm. Kind of bothers me, but it's more I hate, and probably it's because with what kind of type of, I mean, I love a lot of the Asian action scenes, and definitely they're manufactured in a different way than how, you know, Occident do it. Mm-hmm. But I kind of hate when they don't allow me to watch the entire action a little bit, you know, everything is like kind of,
you get a snippet.
I understand why they do that, is they want you to feel like you're in to the fight, kind of, sort of, but then they don't, you know, sort of appreciate, because they are already doing all these stunts anyways, the actors.
Right.
Just give me a little bit, you know, of a long range kind of shot to see the whole thing happening.
Experience. I've got a comparison that my wife is going to love. Some people stupidly compared the Wakanda battle to Helm's Deep. I totally disagree. Helm's Deep is a great, when you look at it as an action sequence, is good because of the buildup. It's not because of the, like, the way it's shot. It's because you understand, A, the stakes. B, there was this calm before the storm. You saw the army come up. You saw them line up.
The doubts, the reality hitting.
Right. You see the elves come in at the last second to help. You have banter between your heroes or your villains. And so you're ready to... Yeah, it's very well done as far as, like, setting it up. Because it gives you that time to breathe, take a take a deep breath, and then go.
Yeah, you're full.
With the Wakanda battle, I feel like we had just touched base again with Vision, and then we're like, okay, get on the little speeder things, and we're going out there to the field.
Like, everything's kind of like rushed out.
It felt so... I don't want to... I mean, I'll say rushed, because it was. We were just there, and then we're there, and then the dogs come, and then everybody's like, okay, we're just going to wait here. Mm-hmm. Oh, shit. They're going to circle us. Okay, I guess we got to open the wind... Like, open the... Right. And you just go. There was no... And I always think it's funny. There's no bomb running scene where the one one goblin just comes running in with a bomb like a football.
Yeah,
and just like the one that sets it off. There was no set off scene. It was just kind of like, oh, we're panicking. It's we're panicking. Just lift it. And it felt rushed.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they actually do a build up a little bit. Because even who is Captain America going to talk to the two guys? Sort of almost like the typical like medieval kind of battle.
Where you kind of meet the generals meet. Yeah.
So it was a little bit, even the Wakanda guys even do the cheering or whatever, like the warrior yelling. So that was kind of cool. Like, all right, it's going well. And then suddenly they just,
They just threw each other at, you know what the problem is? It wouldn't have been bad if we had more like time. But when you think about it, if you ask me honestly, I enjoyed the Titan fight more than the Wakanda fight, and that's the problem. Well, I would rather be on Titan with Tony and with Star-Lord and Doctor Strange. That was, and Spider-Man.
Yeah.
You know, magic kick, magic with a kick. Magic with a punch. And like just shooting him. I enjoyed that fight, and like my heart was pounding in that fight way harder than it was in Wakanda, which is not what should have happened.
And what I'm going to tell you what, like that, they... You clearly can see that they dedicated the most effort and time on that scene.
Which they should have, because there was zero to no actual real set there. That was all CG. Like, they had to dedicate a lot of time to that.
Yeah, but this is my thing. With that budget, they don't have an excuse. If you see somebody, if we're going to put it like contemporary movie, like we talk about John Wick, they don't have nearly as close as a budget.
So amazing.
And... You know, like the action scenes are so clean. It's like, you're on, guys. Like, I mean, you have.
But then again, it's not John Wick plus, you know, like five other John Wick superheroes in there all fighting together against like a giant horde. It becomes, like we talked about, it becomes heavy. And now you become ADD as you can't focus.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you like something like Saving Private Ryan, that scene when they come out of the water, you know, it's hectic like that. It's like a lot of close-ups, but it works way better than what they did with it,
because
it's
that just, scene is what 20 minutes long, and this is a three-hour movie of that scene.
But it's just that it's like, I feel like if you have the budget, I understand they rush out, they have deadlines and stuff,
right?
But I don't know, it's just like,
I feel like the investment's in different places. Like, for example,
For sure.
We watched some short, I think it was on Vanity Fair, when they broke down a scene.
Yeah.
And I did like, when they brought it up and brought it to light, the fact that they like to pan from the person who's making the jokes, or Rocket, to like Peter Quill's face. And they spent like those connection times. But in terms of action sequences, they just want for like the thrill of it and how good it looks, but not like the connection or the reality or the stakes. For example, even in Daredevil, sorry, I'm jumping points, but in Daredevil,
that
hallway scene where he's just kicking ass in the first season.
That's what I'm saying.
It was epic and beautiful, and you appreciated everything that went into that and just the people going through it. Versus like in Iron Fist, he's supposed to be this great martial arts master, and the cuts.
About this. We talk about this.
and snippet, and you don't appreciate what went into that. You can tell,
like,
when
they start doing a lot of cuts, like, yeah.
You're not doing shit.
Yeah, like,
and you kind of lose interest or, like, belief.
You know, they could pull it out, so that's the reason they cut so much.
Yeah.
Like Resident Evil.
Yeah. Five cuts for one punch.
Oh, I mean, Resident Evil is the bottom, like, you know, you're in the...
Scrape the bottom.
But I think that that's our major problem with the Wakanda fight is you have a more... It'd be like Helm's Deep on steroids, also being played intermittently with Helm's Deep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't care about the other one because it's just background noise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Wakanda battle didn't get good to me until Scarlet Witch joined and Thor joined. Mm. Then this became a very different battle for me. But that was also because... the battle on Titan had slowed down. They had subdued him, and my adrenaline had started to come down, and so the battle on Wakanda became a little bit higher as far as my priority went. And then Thor was kicking ass because Thor had been sidelined since the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
He's being the poor guy with no, like, the sterile guy. That's what they call it.
The sterile guy.
He can't have an erection because he's, you know, hammer.
You're just too powerful, so man. Like, gotta save you.
You know,
just. My hammer would just take me off. Oh my god, the hammer got you off.
Yeah, but yeah, it's just coming back to just to wrap it up, the action part. It's like, imagine if you, what kind of fight, but somehow they pull it out to look like the Battle of the Bastards.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be, like, you know, majestic.
Very.
Hopefully for the next one, like, they can fix that part.
Yeah.
So before we wrap up, I do have the obvious question to ask, which is, what hopes or what do you think will happen in the next one? Like, what's one thing that you want to see in this next one? Do you need time to think?
Yeah.
For me, they already have a few key points. Villain, obviously. I hope it doesn't, you know, the balloon, you know, just
deflates
with Thanos, because he already went to fulfill his goal.
Yeah.
So the next level, or like the next layer for this character, is gonna be hard to put in the second movie. So I hope they find a way to keep him relevant, and because he's the best part of the movie for me. Action scenes, they need to polish some of that. At least for me, they don't have excuse to come up with, like, you know, we have deadlines, or they have all the money they want to do that and hire the best of the best.
Mm-hmm.
And to not pull a cheap trick of, like, hey, surprise, everybody comes to life. That will be
so
pretty disappointing.
One iteration of the comics,
yeah,
they put the glove, one of the heroes gets a glove and snaps their fingers. Nebula. Yeah, Nebula gets a glove and snaps her fingers to bring everybody back, which technically makes sense from a lore standpoint. Yeah. If you can take everybody away with the snap of your fingers, you can bring them back. I don't know if that's what's going to happen. I know for a fact that we might get some time travel to some of the sets that are leaking. And if that's the case, my hope is that we do not linger too long in two different timelines, because obviously we're only going to run with one, and if we got a 3-hour runtime, I don't want to waste time jumping back and forth and then being stuck in a timeline that I'm like, this timeline doesn't even count anymore, so why are we still here? So if we're going to jump back in time, almost do it like a Days of Future Past, where you spend minimal time in the quote-unquote present with everybody dead, and we are going back and spending the majority of the time rewriting history, so to speak. But then there comes the question of, how do we do that? Do we need a time stone? And if that's the case, because Tony and Nebula are still on Titan, they are not going home.
Yeah.
There is no spaceship to take them home. So Thanos is on Titan, obviously looking at the sunset.
It's beautiful. I was in Malibu.
I was going to say, let's see, Bali or something. Chill. I want to be where Thanos is.
I want to be Mrs. Thanos. So I think that Nebula will help get that stone back and help get Tony.
Maybe the Time Stone?
Time Stone obviously has to play something, but Doctor Strange is really the only one that knows how to use it, and he's dead.
But, yeah.
Wong can.
Somebody was talking about the way he delivered that time, like when Tony, that was the only way. Yeah, so.
The only way is for Tony to live, I think, is that one outcome. But the only way that Tony lives is if... Stephen Strange gives Thanos the Time Stone at that moment, and lets Tony live because it gives Tony that time to watch everybody else die.
Yeah.
And it drives Tony. So I think we will, this is all part of that plan.
Yeah.
But that time stone still has to make its way to Earth for us to go back. We still have Ant-Man and the Wasp, and we still have Captain Marvel.
Yeah. And Hawkeye. Well, maybe not. He's like retired with what?
I think his family just disappeared, and I think he like
that will be awesome nice. Because then like, you know, finally, because Hawkeye, let's face it, he's always in the background.
He is.
So if the family dies, like he has a powerful
motive.
Yeah, for sure.
To move forward. But I want, if we are going to go back in time, I want them to have fun retreading old ground that we know versus like, we have to go back to this specific point in time. I would almost want them to go back and like address some of the cheese that they've had in the series so far. Like if we do go back to the Battle of New York, to have characters in there that we don't know have been there. Mm-hmm. Like the set photo that I know that I've seen was having both Ant-Man and Spider-Man in the Battle of New York for the mm-hmm. first one and have like see what could have happened at that point. Yeah. But if that's the case, then most of the heroes should be back if yeah. Spider-Man's back. So if that's the case, why are we going back in time? Unless, so there's so many questions to me that like, you yeah. got to be really careful. This is my concern. You have to be really careful with time travel because
yeah.
the more convoluted it becomes, the more broken it becomes.
Well, yeah. Like, again, we come back towards they finally sort of find a point where the story have sense. They create a great villain.
Mm-hmm.
So they pull out some good stuff for this one. I'm not going to be all like, oh, yeah. this is crap.
Yeah.
But, you know, you don't want to throw away all that.
Everything you built.
Yeah.
So, right. And which is what could happen if we start messing with time traveling. But Caroline, is there anything that you wish? Because Hugo says, you know, making sure the action mm-hmm. and the villains stay relevant.
Mm-hmm.
I say, make sure we're not going to get too convoluted mm-hmm. with our timelines. Is yeah. there anything that you really want to see for number four?
Apparently, I'm just going DC here. I just want some darkness. I really do want people to sacrifice themselves and be gone in whatever way, shape, or form. So whether that's retiring or death, I want the stakes to mean something. I want it to have weight yeah. and to everything that's built up. Yeah, it's not just like a Twilight, like, oh, yeah. no, nobody died. We're great. It was what could have happened.
Yeah.
I really want something to come of it and everything sacrifices and to all come to fruition here and mean something. And they
you just don't you want
have to pay with your life sometimes yeah. or pay with, you know.
You just don't want Gamora to die again.
No, I don't. But but if it is, if it mean, I mean, it means a lot, obviously. Right. And
I mean, this last one meant a lot.
Right. But I want other people again. I don't want everyone just to come back magically. I want it.
Yeah. Some so you want if they die in this bearing, next one.
Have meaning. It's okay to be a little sad. It's okay to like lose something right. because it all, that's how life pans out. You don't come out unscathed. And that's what where you find meaning and you find purpose and
yeah, and like that. We talk about this in the beginning. I was telling Chris, you know, in the comics sort of work that cheesiness
mm-hmm.
in a way, just for the format and how, you know, use, you know, to tell the story in comics.
Mm-hmm.
But in filmmaking, doesn't kind of work that much.
Yeah.
You lose that, like, whatever, they're going to come back. So mm-hmm. you lose that interest.
Yeah.
You're not invested.
It's the same thing in anime. Is what happens. It's really good in a manga because you're like reading
yeah.
week by week, only chapter by chapter, not even volume, but chapter yeah. by chapter. When you watch TV episode, I know Caroline and I felt this when we watched Bleach, mm-hmm. we would be worried for side characters more than we'd be worried for like the actual main characters because we're like, there's no way they're killing them off. This is episode number 365. There's no way you're dying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, we've had you this far.
Just look what happened with Game of Thrones when Jon Snow come back, it was a polarizing decision.
Yeah.
I think it had to be like that. Like you already set the bar in a line
mm-hmm.
and that's the reason people come back to that show.
Yeah.
Because it feels realistic, you right. know, like especially on that
there's a lot to lose.
Fantasy period time.
Yeah.
And with Jon Snow, I like everybody was fine to Jon Snow come back to life, but like, wait a minute. And even though they sort of, you know, explain a little bit why he was able to
mm-hmm.
for me it was like really
you know I'm the same way. I almost yeah. wanted it to take a bigger toll on John like mm-hmm. I wanted it to be a slightly different John when he came back
mm-hmm.
and to me that would have equaled out to something that when you die you yeah, do like, lose a piece of yourself
right
because with the Brotherhood guy mm-hmm. the Brotherhood without
he
banners
died yeah. a lot.
He died a lot but every time he said every time I get brought back mm-hmm. I'm a little bit
well,
less
maybe
like
we
myself.
Haven't seen that yet.
maybe, well, but I mean,
we're still, you know, last season and stuff.
I don't, but we're in the end game. Now is not the time to be fucking with characterization. No,
never
no.
say never.
why you do this? So that's great. That's three really big different opinions of what we want in the fourth one. And then I guess going off of that, what do you, I didn't even get to ask you two, what do you two think of having Ant-Man and the Wasp and Captain Marvel stuck in between these types of films? Do you think that lessens the impact of the films, or do you think that only strengthens like the anticipation?
I'm wary on Captain Marvel. It's the first film, first time we'll be experiencing it, and apparently is going to be saving or doing a huge role as to this next movie, at least I feel like. So to me, it's a little, it's a lot to put on a character we're just getting introduced to. I'm hesitant. I'll give it its shot. I'm biased. I'll own it. I love Ant-Man, and I can't wait to see the Wasp. So I feel like it's a lighter. Again, it's going on the light side of Marvel, and they're like, hey, let's like focus on this for a little bit. Haha, right. Like how great is this? And I'm okay with it. I don't know if it's gonna add, I don't think it'll take away, but I don't think it's going to add much. But it'll just be its second film, which is what it's supposed to be. Yeah,
I know a lot of people are like, ain't nobody caring about like Ant-Man and the Wasp, because after this movie, like, I don't care about it. I know, yeah. But that's what I'm saying. Like, I just wanted to pick both of your brains as far as it, like, does it matter?
I don't put any pressure on it. Like, calm down, people.
There you go.
Just enjoy yourself. It's a summer film. Like,
thank you for saying that. We should, like, make a hashtag somehow in there. Chill out.
It's summer.
It's just summer. I don't know. I mean,
I'm interested to know you, because you don't like, this is way too much superhero for even me. Like, I'm like, yeah. Jesus, like, it's May, then it's July, and then it's November, and then we're back. I mean, February, and then we're back again. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a lot.
Honestly, the only reason, well, I was a little bit interested in Infinity War just because, I mean, yeah, I've been watching it for a while, so it's like, well, the culmination, okay, let's see. But I think I told the past podcast, I'm going to maybe wait until they come streaming or something. I'm not going to go to the theater. And my wife surprisingly told me, like, hey, let's go see Infinity War. I was like, what? Like, wait a minute, where's my wife and what you did with her? And that was the only reason I went.
She's like, I heard Diego Luna was in it.
Right.
Oh my gosh.
Wrong franchise.
Right.
Yeah. But I don't think I'm going to watch Ant-Man and Captain Marvel until, you know, they come later. Mm-hmm. I think I never was invested with Ant-Man, even before, you know, in the comics. And Captain Marvel, I know about her, but I don't have any info about it.
Right.
So I think they're going to start with them finally building the next phase for Marvel. I feel that that's the importance of those two movies.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a big fan, it's something that you should go and watch, for sure.
Yes.
But, you know, like, at least for this Infinity War, I don't think they're going to add.
Yeah.
I think that they're just going to start building the next sort of storyline or something.
I feel like they are going to add them into the next one because they've cleared the board of half of the players on the field. And now there's more room, because can you imagine that same Infinity War with Ant-Man, Wasp, Captain Marvel making a cameo, as well as having all of their support characters, whoever comes with them, as well as Hawkeye. There wasn't any room for that. We didn't even have any room really for the destruction of Nova Corp. Right. Thanos already got that power, so I'm like, well, there was no room for that.
Yeah.
No room to even see the destruction of the Asgard ship. Mm-hmm. Like, it just happened already. So to fit those characters in now, I think it gives us some time to catch up with a lot of characters we might have missed. And then they get added straight in to fill in some slots for number four.
Even for a contractual, right?
Contractual.
You know, side, it's a lot of people, you know, people on the payroll.
It's just stuff and, all these in know, here.
Like somebody like Robert Downey Jr. is like, fuck it, I want to get paid because, you know, my relevance is an actor. I'm not going to, you know, erase a few zeros because I have the privilege to be in the Infinity War.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that was interesting. Now, as always, we end the show with recommendations. So, Caroline, just to give you a little heads up, think about any kind of movie or book or something that you might have witnessed or played, something that sparks you. So go ahead and think about it while Hugo and I talk, okay. And then we'll get to you. We're going to give you some time. Hugo, yes, do you have any?
Yeah, I have a few. So recently I watched a movie on Netflix called Kodachrome. So for some of you guys that listen to podcasts, you know that mainly I do video production, but lately I'm being into photography. And lately I've been focusing a little bit on film photography. You know, like for you millennials that don't know what is that.
Before shots fired.
You have just like between like 25 or 30 pictures in this little roll with this particular material. That's it.
It's called film.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you need to think about it, you know, how to take the picture and blah, blah. But yeah, I've been doing a lot. I hear about it on another great podcast. If you care about film photography, I don't think it's that big market. Well, it's growing, but it's coming back. But it's called Studio 41. So if you want to hear about, you know, film world, go there. And these guys, you know, recommended, like, these movies coming to Netflix. It's great. So basically, the story is this famous photographer. And it's based on a famous New York Times note. It's called something down the lines of stories about, like, you know, street photography or something like that. Whatever. Mm-hmm. They pull it out from there. Famous photographer. He had a really bad relationship with... his son, which is like a label record manager or something. And the guy has cancer and he just had a few days to live or months. Mm-hmm. And he wants to go on a road trip with his son to, I think it's from New York to Arkansas or something like that, because that's the last places where they're going to develop this particular film, Kodachrome, doesn't it? But so it's a road movie / drama. Little comedy in there. It's Scarlet Witch in there too. It's like, what, Olsen?
Elizabeth Olsen, yeah.
So it's fun, it's light, heavy drama, obviously. You know, these guys have a really bad relationship. Mm-hmm. But it was great, it was surprising. I watched it 2 times. Oh, that's wow. A lot to say.
I mean, I saw you put it on Facebook, yeah. And I was like, it's on our queue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really great. Even if you don't care about film, don't worry, it's not like super nerdy about it.
Yeah.
It's obviously the guy's photographer, and down the road gives you a little hint of, you know, of that side, but it's not that much. It's not the focus.
Yeah.
Video games. I'm been playing Alien Isolation a little bit. I started. Really great survival kind of horror.
I have it, yeah.
Yeah, it's more scary than what I thought. And like,
it's terrifying. I can't play it at night. I can only play it in the middle of the day.
Yeah, it's like a...
Go listen to the Scarecast.
Yeah, definitely. You, I think one of the great mechanics of the game is that you don't have an actual weapon to kill this thing.
And I think that's really does separate it.
Yeah, it makes you feel like really defenseless. Like,
another good mechanic of the game too is there's no life system. Like, you die, but you get to restart, so it's not too penalizing. But it still freaks you out every time because. You hear it, you see it, and it stalks you, and you think you're safe, and you're not safe.
That's creepy.
I think they capture really well the first movie a lot. Mm-hmm. I think that was a key for the developer, that they capture what it was, that first Alien movie.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's a lot to say.
No, it is.
That thing is almost like a masterpiece, that first movie. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and I'm going to read a book, but it's in Spanish, so if... you're lazy or you don't know it. I mean, you know, I'm sometimes lazy to read in English. It cost me a little bit more time. But it's called Mysteries of the Dark Room. It's of a journalist or more like a movie critic that I follow and admire. And basically, she made a few, what is it called in English? I forget the name in English. It's a particular name, but it's almost like... they relate movies with like the social economic situation of the time they came. So for example, they talk about, to put an example, The Exorcist, how at that time in the world, at a cultural level, it was a lot of kind of like a chaos in a way. I think it was Cold War when The Exorcist came out.
60s, yeah.
Yeah, around that time. Or it was after World War II or whatever, but people don't trust like the big institutions like church and stuff like that. So she talks about that, like how a movie like The Exorcist, even though that wasn't their intention, it reflect that chaos moment of people during that movie.
Losing faith, yeah.
And I mean, The Exorcist, if you didn't watch it, maybe you should avoid it. Like, if you're bored of all the crap that's every summer coming out that is not even scary, go and watch The Exorcist for once. But anyways, that was a good book. If you can read in Spanish, give you the opportunity. It's a great learning tool, yeah. But those are my recommendations.
Do you have any, Caroline, or would you like me to go first?
I haven't been home much and I work a lot, but the only one that comes to mind, because I'm sure you mentioned Wild Wild Country, but I was really into Planet Earth 2 on Netflix.
Look at that. We don't really talk about a lot of like nature documentaries,
well,
but go ahead. The wind up.
Go ahead. I just enjoy, because I feel like we're so saturated in social media, what celebrities are doing, whatever. I just like the change of pace of in nature, like focus on these incredible things, and you just learn about different creatures, or there's new footage of creatures we don't even get to see much footage of, like snow leopards. And I just like feeling grounded and awesome in appreciation of Mother Nature. So
I totally agree with you. There's a scene in there where the lizards, like these little tiny lizards are born, and the snakes like come after them, like the first, the second that the
iguanas. I know what he's talking.
It gave me the same amount of adrenaline that Infinity War gave me, as I'm like shouting for this little tiny lizard I named Steven to go. I was like, oh, Steven, oh God.
And these horrible snakes are just like mass.
But you're right. And for a nature documentary to get you like that, like it's that real. Was good. I'm glad you thought of that. Yeah.
For the people that you're hearing right now, like maybe the young people get for granted those kind of shots, but if you compare those type of documentaries to where we're kids, there's a massive gap in quality.
And the time that it takes to even stake out and capture those moments, really cool job to have. Very boring, but when they get the shot, they get the shot.
Yeah, they do, and I will give them that. It's completely pretty. Yeah. Carolina just has to be careful, because sometimes if we watch it too late at night, I mean, the dude who narrates that is so on point. Oh, he just lulls you to sleep.
Like, I'm a baby again. Like, good night, world.
Awesome.
Recommendations from me. I was afraid that you were going to take this one. We just recently watched Blade Runner for the first time in our lives.
The original?
The original. The Ridley Scott final cut. he's like he's doing the sign of the cross. So it's a 1982 movie, and Hugo's just been talking this thing up the entire time I'm watching it. I'm trying to put my head in a mindset of somebody who lived in the 80s, who they've never seen crap like this. Like Star Wars is the biggest sci-fi kick in the door that people have had. I don't understand how people swallowed that pill. Like that, for the first 30 minutes, even I was just like, I'm trying. Caroline's like, you're not reacting to anything I'm saying. I'm saying all these funny things. You're not saying anything. My brain was still trying to like process, like, okay, what's happening? Okay, I'm trying to gain all this new vocabulary. And I'm born in a society where this is just commonplace to have this stuff happen. I don't know how people in the 80s, the early 80s, mind you, that.
It wasn't successful, though.
No. Well, yeah, not when it first came out.
No, nobody until later become like a cult thing, and it's you know, it's growing more. But yeah, it was a flop.
I can imagine people standing up in the middle of the theater going, "What the fuck is this?" Like, totally. I love how dead face pander he just gave me that. Oh, this movie was not successful like at all. Like, no, was a turn.
Yeah,
no, but people uncovered it later. The realization of the world was amazing to have, and I could see. You could see its influence from Ghost in a Shell. You could see the movie of Ghost in a Shell's influence from it. Like, it's this weird reflexive thing. But in a way, I had seen too many things that were derivative of Blade Runner where I'm like, oh, this is just like so-and-so, instead of me saying this is this so-and-so thing is just like Blade Runner. Because I was telling Caroline, I'm like, this is the exact plot of Fallout 4.
Yeah.
Like, I'm basically the exact opposite of Harrison Ford. I'm trying to get the synths out.
Yeah.
And he's trying to kill him. And so it was so strange to me to see all of these cultural influences from this movie. And I kept thinking like it was going to be this bigger, grander idea, but it really wasn't. It was just the idea of who's a synth, who's not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And do you sympathize with them? And can you save them? Do they have feelings? I
took it as more as an experience. Like, you weren't supposed to be like, this means so much. Yeah. It's just like you were along for the ride. You're like, all right, that was fun, interesting, different.
People like talk about it so much, And so I really didn't know what to expect. Mm-hmm. And people had always talked about, you know, Tears in the Rain so much. So when he delivered that line, like, I chuckled. And I'm like, that ruined that line for me. Like I could see where that, like, was super, like, impressive, like, at the time. Because mm-hmm. when you think about it, yeah, you just get erased. You'll be forgotten. Just like Tears in the Rain. Like, you mean nothing.
Yeah.
But people have memed that so hard. Like, it just doesn't.
The internet ruins things.
Yeah, it does. It really just chews it up. About halfway through, I'm like, I don't know if I'm enjoying this. At the end, I'm like, all right, I get it. Like, that was cool. Like, we even thought about maybe even to try to watch the other one yesterday. And we're like, no, it's too late.
Yeah.
It's too late to put that on.
Well, the music's strangely, like, melodic and soothing, too. And I was just like, night to this. No, I got to stay awake.
But how do I put this? It met expectations, if that makes sense. It didn't underperform, nor did it exceed them. It met my expectations for what I thought it might be and what I got out of it. And I did like the villain more, not the villain, the synth that chases him at the end more than I thought I would.
That guy is pretty great. Even though we don't see it that much, that last couple of minutes, like, he nailed it.
There was, like, certain parts where I'm like, I can't fault them because they don't have the same technology that we did, but there was one part where he, like, plows his head through, like, the wall.
That was hilarious. And he was just like,
but even the work of the director of photography is amazing. It holds really great.
Somebody give that guy a dollar because that shit held up really well.
Just a dollar.
I didn't want to say the full line. Caroline's dad's line. Somebody give that motherfucker a dollar.
But yeah, like, I mean, seeing 2049. It's like on that department, it's like, damn, they did a perfect job.
You're right, because it did play with light a lot in the absence or the insertion of it and having it be like passing cars and having it just set up like a mood. It did a really, really good job. I think one of the things that brought me out of the movie, though, was when Caroline made like just an observation.
Which was?
Like,
which one?
So when I think her name's Rachel, the synth. She's like in his apartment and they're sitting there and she's getting comfortable and her hair is like done up in a really like weird futuristic way. And then she undoes it.
It's just like straight bangs, straight back. Yeah. And then she's like,
she undoes it and it's just like this curls. Huge curls and it's long. And Caroline's like, because that's how that works. Like, I laughed so hard because it was that weird. Like, she had like this 80s haircut now.
Yeah.
But it went from like futuristic to 80s. And I was like, you're right. Like, that's so weird.
Well, and her defense, she's a saint, so maybe.
She's like, I got a lot of things right. I don't, honey.
It's programmed.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, Caroline is like, where I can buy that? You know,
I need what you're using.
So, I mean, if you haven't seen it, I suggest you go see it. It's definitely worth a watch, at least. So, that's my recommendation.
Again, way separate with Infinity War. It's a total different movie
To watch.
So, if you're not into, like, I won't say it's low pacing, but it's something that you need to think about it. Then
It's exactly what it says on the description. Yeah. It's a neo-noir. So it's like a film noir, but just set in the future. And it really does capture it. Because I was thinking, you can basically have this set in the past and still have this film work. Mm-hmm. You just change synth out for like an illegal immigrant.
Yeah, or something like that.
And you basically get the same plot and make it a detective story. And he falls in love with the illegal immigrant and he helps them get away when somebody's trying to fight him, realizes that the other immigrant he thought was the enemy ends up saving him. You get a noir film from the movie. So the time period doesn't matter. It captures that feeling of those old 1940 film noirs.
Right. Even if you can say this kind of like a what's that story? Romeo and Juliet?
Romeo and Juliet?
A little bit. I mean, it kind of works like that, you know.
Two different
sides.
They
belong to two different worlds.
Mm-hmm. You're right. Yeah,
but it's great. Are you guys planning to watch Ryan Gosling version?
Yes,
I'm interested. Yeah, I want to see it.
You guys.
It definitely has earned my view on our voodoo that I have for free. to go ahead and click on that.
And Harrison's in there. I gotta see how that ties in.
Now, can I ask a question without you spoiling anything? Like, what's the ratio of Harrison in this movie? Is he like in just a third of it, and then he's like? Not or is
I won't
he like
say 50%?
Okay. Solid. I can live with that.
Yeah,
I just didn't want it to be like he's like
tail end.
I want to say like Force Awakens, where he's like there and then just.
No, he keeps the relevance of the first movie.
Okay, yeah, that was my big concern. Yeah. Okay, perfect.
Yeah, it's not just there for be like the folkloric. Oh yeah, we have Harrison Ford too here.
Da, da, da.
You know? Yeah. No,
is that,
yeah.
Is that the Harrison Ford?
That's exactly what it is.
Every time I see him on screen,
right?
There he is.
I found him.
Well, guys, that was the recommendation for this podcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Caroline to join. It's always great to have her point of view of things, for sure. So, you know, keep listening. Wait for the podcast 69. It's going to be hot.
Hot. Actually, we didn't explain that.
Right.
We did a dry run where we didn't record for the first 15
minutes.
But it was
great because my cable wasn't working. So.
So just to kind of catch everybody up for what you didn't hear, we've always been talking how 50 was our mark to hit. Mm-hmm. Obviously 100, but we were always like, let's get to 50. Our next mark right now is episode 69. And we're going to talk about...
How far away from that are we?
We're at 55.
55, yeah.
14 more to go. Okay, we're going to talk about sexual awakenings, not just crushes. We're talking about the people that make us feel things.
Oh, boy.
Those inside. Kind of things.
Yes, those feelings that come late at night when you're
I'm going to bring all my diaries and stuff.
So that's the big one. Episode 69. It'll be hot. You do not want to miss it. We'll bring both of our wives and Sydney for wonderful perspectives on sexual awakening.
Right. We want as much.
Oh, boy.
Oh,
we,
boy.
We don't need to go super in deep on that, but you know, you get the point. Actually, it's going to be hard for me to remember. Anyways, hashtag halos. See you into the next one. Don't be nasty and take a shower before your activities, please.
Thanos to man.
Sorry, Caroline. That was really good.